Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com.
Hello and welcome to another effervescent episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. On today's podcast, we have a very good in-depth interview with Chicago dramatist Russ Tutorow. He talks with Tom Williams about the dramatist's new play and, of course, their new book. Also, Chicago critic Tom Williams has four more exciting reviews to give to you. And, of course, as always, I will be giving you the theater news. So sit back, relax, and get ready to talk some theater. Hello, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, and I will be giving you the news for the week of March 20th, 2006. Chicago's record-breaking production of Wicked will soon receive a special visit from another land, The Great White Way. Tony Award winner Carol Shelley, Broadway's original Madame Horrible, will assume the role in Chicago for a limited appearance from April 25th to June 25th, 2006. Carol Shelley will be stepping in while Rondi Reed fulfills her commitment to appear with fellow Steppenwolf Ensemble member John Mahoney in Northlight Theater's production of The Retreat from Moscow. But don't worry, Rondi Reed will be returning to Wicked on June 27th. So go see Carol Shelley while you can. The American Music Theater Project at Northwestern University will host a week-long summer festival on the Evanston campus titled The Power of the American Popular Song. The AMTP is looking for young, talented songwriters or writing teams, up to the age of 30, of course, to participate in the festival's free workshop and master classes. The festival will be held from August 7th through August 12th and feature some of America's most prominent songwriters working in the tradition of the legendary Johnny Mercer. For more information on the American Music Theater Project, call 847-467-0333. Again, that's 847-467-0333. Writers Theater has announced its 2006-2007 season. It's going to mark the company's 15th anniversary. The season includes Another Part of the Forest by Lillian Hellman, Bach at Leipzig by Itmar Moses, The Puppet Master of Lodz by Giles Siegel, and Othello by William Shakespeare. For complete season information, visit writerstheater.org or call 847-242-6000. Word has been buzzing around that Chicago and Toronto are in a bidding war for the hit London musical Billy Elliot. It appears that Toronto may be coming in as the winner, but not yet. So Chicagoans who want Billy Elliot, do what you can to get your voice heard. We need Billy Elliot here in Chicago. Congratulations to Rick Cleveland for his solo piece, My Buddy Bill, expected to appear at the Goodman Theater this fall. Rick was just awarded the best performance in a one-person show at the Aspen Comedy Festival. Congratulations, Rick Cleveland. Bernadette Peters will be coming to Naperville. That's right, you heard me. Bernadette Peters will be coming to Naperville. The highly acclaimed diva has booked one night and one night only at Pfeiffer Hall on September 30th. Do whatever you can to see Bernadette Peters live on stage. Tis the season for announcing your next season. That's right, Looking Glass Theater has also announced their 2006-2007 season. 4 major productions are ready for the next year, including a new work by Tony Award winner Mary Zimmerman. The season begins with Argo Nautica, opening this October, a world premiere by Zimmerman, who has adapted the tale of Jason's voyage on the Argo and his quest for the Golden Fleece. Then in February, The Wooden Breeks opens, the Midwest premiere of a new play by Glenn Berger. Coming in April of 2007, Black Diamond by J. Nicole Brooks, a Looking Glass artistic associate. And then coming in July of 2007, The Looking Glass's signature piece, Looking Glass Alice, the highly physical adaptation of Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. Check out their entire season. They do great work. And Talk Theater in Chicago would like to express condolences for the family of Fred Solari. Mr. Solari passed away on his sleep on Thursday, March 9th, at the age of 55. He was deeply involved with the Athenaeum Theater since the 1970s and was the executive director since 1994. Many respects to a man who will be deeply missed. Thank you for joining me here for another week of Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. Remember, you can check us out every week on this podcast or on the web. Until next week, this is Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater news happens every day. Don't miss it.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of Two for the Show, which is an original musical at the Theater Building in Chicago. It is written by Will Klinger and James Fitzgerald, directed by Jeremy Wessler, produced by Theater Wit at the Theater Building in Chicago. Roadshow lives on. Theater Wit loves to find new musicals to enchant us, and their latest, Two for the Show, is an ode to vaudeville, to the old Bob Hope Bing Crosby films, chock full of cornball humor, goofy sight gags, funny rhymes with old-time soft-shoe dances, complete with straw hat and cane. This is pure old-fashioned vaudeville. This delightful and hilarious trip through the vaudeville circuit is enjoyable because we quickly like the team of Rice and Shine. Rice is played by Will Klinger, and Shine is played by Brett Tunomi, who is new to Chicago and he is something special. Will Klinger and James Fitzgerald have written a clever original score featuring all the expected gags, bits, and light musical numbers, so hokey, so vaudeville, that we are ready to cheer if we weren't too busy laughing. Klinger and Tunomi work together marvelously as the two easily and competently land their routines, songs, and dances. It's like they have played together for years. I'll tell you, it brings back the old Hope and Crosby films. It's like bringing them back to life. The show plays as if it was a vaudeville act, where when you went on the road, you did 3 to 5 shows a day, 6 days a week on the legitimate stage. The storyline is thin, but so what? As the two carnival barkers both get fired, they team up, and with the aid of Louise, who's played by Lindsay Perlman, who does a nice job, excellent singer and a good actress. But the three of them win a talent contest. And of course, she needs to leave, so they give her the $100 they win for the contest. In the meantime, they say, hey, the two of us have an act. So therefore, Rice and Shine becomes a standard vaudeville act. So after several years on the road, performing, you know, in New York and all other major cities, Klinger and Tunomi enchant us with numbers like Two Flops from Floppingham, done in their finest mock British accents. A song about a salad was terrific, with Tunomi and Perlman as a witty, clever showstopper. You know, we hear ballads, satirical numbers, as well as fine ditties throughout this fast-paced, funny, light musical. When Rice, played by Klinger, gets a movie deal without Shine, bitterness breaks up the act. Louise tries to bring both guys together and expresses her love for both of them in a very provocative but I think cute number called All of the Above. It's kind of a love song that I love both of them. Of course, as in all road films, The two get together at the end as Shine gets a big show on Broadway and he needs help when everything breaks down. Rice comes and helps him, and they all live happily ever after, and they do a reprise of probably the best song in the show, the song called Friends to the End. Kingsley Day's deaf piano work and musical arrangements made the show sound real good. He also did little acting bits that helped out. Two for the Show is funny, tuneful, with a lovable characters rich in old-time Broadway showbiz flavor. Klinger and Tonomi are tremendous. This show is a big-time effort. This very small show is a big-time entertainment. My rating for this show, highly recommended. It is refreshing to see a Broadway musical done in the old style that is so well written and so well done, and it's a bargain at only a $30 ticket price. A little mini musical that is very well danced and very polished. You'll enjoy this. The title is Two for the Show. It is written by Will Klinger and James Fitzgerald, directed by Jeremy Weschler. It is produced by Theater Wit at the Theater Building Chicago, 1225 West Belmont, Chicago, Illinois. The show runs Thursdays through Saturdays at 8:15, Sundays at 2:30. The running time is 2 hours with intermission. It runs through April 22nd, and the number for tickets is by calling 773-327-5252. That's 773-327-5252. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here is my review of Autobahn, directed by Daryl W. Cox at Profiles Theater in Chicago. Profiles Theater, known for edgy, raw theatrical work, has mounted an intelligent, comical show set in the confines of an automobile. Autobahn contains wittiest writing to date as he cleverly uses the front seat of a car as a platform for personal confessions. This is a collection of 6 short plays filled with tense humor, shocking revelation, told with biting honesty. The voyeuristic peek into each couple's lives starts and ends as they travel in their cars. The first one is called Bench Seat. We meet Guy, played by Eric Berger, who takes his vintage Buick up to Lover's Lane with Girl, played by Julie Zarlenga. Julie thinks he's going to dump her, like he did the last grad student he went out with. This marvelously performed scene by Zarlenga puts a new spin on crazy girlfriends. Berger's facial expression tells of his bewilderment. That was a terrific scene. The next little mini play is titled All Apologies. Finds Man, played by David Earl White, cleverly fixating on words and the meaning of words and the connotations of words as he desperately tries to apologize to his silent wife, who is played by Annette Oslowski. This is one where the man gets hung up on words as he's trying to apologize for a major indiscretion. And Annette was terrific without uttering a word. In the third little mini play is called Merge. Man, played by Joe Yaharis, questions his wife about her business trip as Woman, played by Katie Crawford, deliciously and bluntly recalls waking up nude in her hotel room after letting 2 men into the room. She remembers letting them into the room, and then she had had a couple of drinks. She wakes up nude in her room, and this was all at the convention or the business meeting that she just got off the plane with. In the meantime, her husband, Yaharis' mixture of rage and curiosity works well. I mean, this is a funny scene. Now, the question with this scene is she making it up just to wind up her husband, or is she just being bluntly honest about what happened? You be the judge. In the next little mini scene, remember, all these take place in the car. They're all, these confessionals happen as 2 people are sitting in the front seat of their car, driving somewhere. In the one called Long Division, finds one, say, early 20-something fellow. They never have names, so he's called Man, and it's played by Tyler Gray. He's delivering a very, very funny monologue about how the other man, played deliciously without any dialogue by Brian Kavanaugh. What happened is the man who doesn't speak broke up with his girlfriend, as we find out from the marvelous monologue that Tyler Gray puts on. And he keeps telling him about, well, we understand that you broke up and you got to show her who's boss and so forth. And it really comes down to where he wants to get the Nintendo game back or have his friend get it back so that he can play it. I mean, this is a really cute bit. In the next little incident is called Road Trip. And here we find Man, who's an older guy, played by Jack McCabe, as the friendly older coach slash driver's ed instructor, taking a two-day ride with a cute, naive student, played by Amy Speckian. Are they relatives, or is there a sinister motive at play here? The last few seconds reveals all. This was the most dramatically tense scene of the night. I think this scene is worth the whole play. In the last of the six mini-plays, we find Veronica Schaefer playing Woman. She delivers a compelling monologue about returning their foster child, who turns into a criminal, to the orphanage after several harrowing episodes. This is the one about guilt and whether or not they did the right thing. And Bill Hyland, who plays Man, who's driving the car, speaks volumes without uttering a word. I enjoyed this well-acted series of mini-plays. Smart dialogue, rich characterizations, and wit comes alive in this confessional piece set in the safety of an automobile. Daryl W. Cox has his young cast totally immersed in each mini play. I especially like Tyler Gray's work, David Earl White, and Amy Speckian. I think they did terrific work. Autobound is a funny show with elements of mystery and intrigue that will keep you engaged throughout. This is one of those little provocative shows that is a real treat. My rating for this show, recommended. It is at Profiles Theater, which is located 4147 North Broadway in Chicago. The show runs Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 7 p.m. Tickets are from $18 to $22, depending on which night you go. The running time is 1 hour and 50 minutes with one intermission. It runs through April 23rd. For more information and to get reservations, call 773-549-1815. That's 773-549-1885. This is Tom Williams. Talk to you again. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and here's my review of Killers by Mariachi Theater at Angel Island. Killers is a grungy, creepy classic. Mariachi Theater, now in its 20th season, presents a dark dramatic comedy featuring five desperate, insane characters, each struggling with their own demons. With a realistic, dingy two-room set, complete with an old 1950s kitchen with an old beat-up refrigerator and stove, a squeaky bed in the boarder's room with an overhead fan and blinds on the windows. In the bedroom is complete with a small table with a portable typewriter. This is an excellent set designed by Grant Savin. Killers, which was written by John Olive and directed by Robert Bueller, who is a longtime member of the Steppenwolf acting staff. Robert Bueller originated the starring role 20 years ago at Steppenwolf when this play got its world premiere. And now he comes back to Mariachi Theater as a director. Nice turn of events. Killers is about a crime novel or a B-movie come to life. Even with Nick Mantonich's stark lighting design suggests a movie. When you see the bleakness of the stage, you just know that you're back in a time warp in and around the early 1950s. So it's set in a rundown boarding house in American cities, circa, let's say, 1955. We hear someone slavishly typing nonstop in one room. There's a man, Earl, who's sitting at a kitchen table moaning and covering his ears. He can't stand the sound of the typewriter banging away, which forces him to snip on a whiskey bottle that he hides in one of the drawers in the kitchen. And by the way, that man who is the man who's drinking is Earl. He's played by Joseph Hudson. And then we see a teenage boy named Lou, who's played by Hans Fleischmann. He wanders out of the boarding house wearing only his tight white briefs as he apparently is sleepwalking. You realize that this place is kind of a loony bin. Lou, the teenage boy, desperately wants to talk to Charles Blackwell, which is the key character, the man banging on the typewriter. He's played by Richard Kotowski, who is one of the finest character actors in Chicago. He is a trash novelist who is struggling with writer's block in an attempt to finish his latest novel. Lou keeps wanting him to help him organize a mugging so that he can get enough money to pay his rent. The landlady, Wanda, played by K.K. Dodds, threatens Lou, the teenager, with eviction by the end of the week unless he comes up with his back rent. When Wanda's husband, Carl Puthoff, returns after several years in prison, Wanda realizes that she hates him and that she's all dried up. She hates the man and does not love him. She now loves the sound of the typewriter as it hums to her, kill, 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 kill him, kill him, kill him, in her mind. She tries to seduce Blackwell into killing her husband one night after her husband falls asleep. Director Bueller smoothly increases the dramatic tension in each scene toward the foreshadowed violence. Our everyman hero, Blackwell, played with an understated, eerie authority by the terrific character actor Richard Kotowski, is a mystery man focused on his novel. He goes to a strip bar with the husband, played with equal meanness by Carl Puthoff, after being challenged face-to-face by Carl. This is an excellent, intimidating scene where the ex-con husband is eyeball-to-eyeball with the apparently tough trash novelist. Nice scene. Without giving away the storyline, let me say that Killers is truly an actor's play. Long on character development, where nuance, nonverbal looks, posture, and gestures say as much as any of the dialogue. This play is a tad short on plot, but the characterizations and the atmosphere carry them the day. Killers is one of those shows that showcases outstanding acting talent. These five performers exemplify the depth of Chicago acting. My rating on this show, recommended. It is Killers, produced by Mary Archie Theater, which is located at Angel Island, which is on the second floor at 735 Sheridan Road in Chicago. The play runs Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3 p.m. The running time is 90 minutes with no intermission. The tickets run from $18 to $22, depending on which day you come. And for more information and to get reservations, call 773-871-0442. That's 773-871-0442. This is Tom Williams. We'll see you next time. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's review podcast. Here's my review of The Fourth Sister at Trapdoor Theater. Trapdoor Theater loves to mount obscure works, including European plays with an absurdist tendencies. Their latest, titled The Fourth Sister, is an audacious poke at present-day Russia, especially from the wacky sisters desperately trying to survive and find love and happiness in the gangster-ridden, drunken, totally Americanized contemporary Moscow, Russia. With hints of Chekhov, but fully farcical, biting satirical, The Fourth Sister is a manic, zany play that is complicated, sometimes tedious, yet ultimately satisfying. I like the sheer energy and the over-the-top, in-your-face comedy that attacks the modernism and the tendency to be democratic of 21st century Russia. This epic contains much, actually too much satire, too much physicality, yet its manic pace and clever staging with a curious mixture of slapstick, farce, camp, ultimately delivers a provocative treat. This play is funny. The laughs are there. The satire is deliciously and slyly winks at Hollywood, at Russia, and at the New World Order, which are served up to us in a deliciously crazy, wild show. The three sisters, Verna, played by Beata Pelch, is a smart, measured performance. Tanya is by Nicole Wiesner. She did a terrific, over-the-top, sometimes screaming sister Tanya. Katrina was played by Carolyn Shoemaker, and she is this kind of wild, drunken, pretty, lush Russian woman. all of the sisters hunger for love. They look for happiness. And, of course, they want to get a visa to end up in Brighton Beach in New York. Their fates are wrecked by Verna getting pregnant by a politician, Tanya selling her virginity for $600, and Katrina's disastrous drinking, particularly after she had an affair with a Hollywood director who is shooting a film about prostitutes in Moscow. The plot has more twists than a Bavarian pretzel, with several exciting, wacky scenes that keep us laughing and guessing what will happen next. There are gangsters shooting, drunks galore, sexual romps, and a guy trying to sing and play his accordion, and everyone tells him to shut up. This play is full of manic madness that is a real treat. The show is wilder than a Brecht play, rich in wit, weird staging, unpredictability that somehow sustains the action. You'll enjoy this goofy bits, the side gags, the business that Trapdoor Theater loves to do. The excesses work to drive home the biting knock on emerging Russia. The ensemble's sheer effort makes this show worth seeing. It is refreshing to see a contemporary Polish playwright get his work produced here in Chicago. This is a frenzied, frantic show that will overwhelm you with its craziness. You'll laugh and you'll appreciate the work of this troupe. Trapdoor Theater's ensemble has so much fun, it becomes contagious. My rating on this show, recommended. It's The Fourth Sister at Trapdoor Theater, which is at 1655 West Cortland Avenue in Chicago. The play runs Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8 p.m. The running time is 2 hours and 30 minutes with intermission. It runs through April 15th. For tickets, call 773-384-0494. By the way, the tickets are a value at $20. That number to call once more is 773-384-0494. Thank you. Hello, this is Tom Williams, and welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago's podcast. Our special guest today is Russ Tutterow from Chicago Dramatists. Hello, Russ.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Tell us about your new show.
Well, we're just opening a brand new play called Voyeurs de Venus by one of our resident playwrights, Lydia Diamond. And it's a play that was originally commissioned by Steppenwolf, and we're producing the world premiere here. Opens in a couple of days on March 17th, plays through April 15th. And it is a truly remarkable, I think, very important play about race and identity and about exploitation. It's actually historically based. It's all about the Hottentot Venus, who was a famous character from 1810, was an African native woman who was captured and displayed in carnivals and in the streets of London and Paris and in the hospitals and museums of Paris. And it's actually a very disturbing story about the exploitation of this woman.
What time period was that?
1810, which is before we normally are aware of, really. I mean, it was really more like Ben Franklin's time than way before the Industrial Revolution. But 1810, and she has become sort of famous down through history, totally exploited, died very quickly of all kinds of diseases and probably from drink as well. And she was considered a physical oddity. She was considered a link between humans and animals.
Was because she was black or because she was short or what?
Because she was a native African woman from a southern part of Africa. She, because of her large rear end, she was looked on as a physical oddity and very exotic and was exploited for that. And no, people in Europe had never seen anything like that.
Which leads me to Lydia Diamond, the author, is one of your resident playwrights. Is that correct?
Yes. We have 27 resident playwrights.
Let me backtrack even more. Tell us what the mission of Chicago Dramatists, because we end up with a show produced in your theater, directed by you. Now, on a typical play that someone gets involved in Chicago Dramatists, carry us through that, which will give us kind of an explanation of what your organization is about. Because, folks, I can tell you this, that that many, many successful playwrights have come out of this group.
Well, we've been around for 27 years, and we do what's called institutional development of new plays and of playwrights. And we're proud of that word. It's a good word here in Chicago, institutional development. We like to work with, we're trying to take care of the future of the theater. We are here to nurture and develop the theater's most primary artist, the playwright. Without the playwright, there's no show. And these days, this is the way to do it. We provide playwrights with actors, readings, workshops, classes, audiences during the development process. We prefer to work with a writer over a long term rather than find a play and just develop it. We don't do that.
So you develop playwrights. Now, how does someone, do they just walk in and say, hey, I'm a playwright? How does someone get involved?
We search out people, but also anyone, people walk in every day and just sign up and take a class, for instance. We meet a lot of people that way. And they're offered every quarter of the year. But really, a playwright who walks in here, we're going to show them two membership programs. That's how we work. We work through the two membership programs.
And they are?
One is called the residency, which Lydia Diamond's part of. 27 of those people right now. Just happens to be 27. Could be much more, could be less. It just happens to be 27. Those are people that we feel strongly about who have some level of accomplishment already when they apply to that program. We take applications once a year, deadline April 1st. For the residency program, we expect to see them to send us a couple of plays, have a letter of recommendation, and to have a resume with some accomplishments, some productions, some awards.
So you want to take playwrights who have started and they have some recognition, and you want to move them up to the next level.
That's what we do with the residency. And once they're into that program, once we invite them in, really we want to try to do whatever they need. Sometimes they design their own programs, but we have readings and productions and all kinds of things that we normally do, which they can pick and choose from. But it's sort of playwright-driven with the residents. But it's an exclusive program. It's very competitive to get into it. It's free. I mean, we don't charge for it. It's like an honor to be in there. But it's an exclusive program. So, therefore, we have the other program, which we call the Playwrights Network, which is an inclusive program. Anybody can join it at any time, anywhere in the country. It's $125 for the first year, so it's an old-fashioned membership program.
For only $125, they can theoretically, the wannabes who really want to be a writer, for $125, they now have an outlet and they have people that will help guide them and get them started.
Yes, and it's a great price. For that, they receive, well, they send us their scripts. Our resident playwrights critique them, so they get written, you know, good, juicy, meaty, written critiques back of their scripts. And then we look at all those plays that come in. There's about 200 people who belong to the Playwrights Network at any one time, so it's a large program. Some of them are from Portland, Oregon, and Florida, and most of them are from the area here. But if you come here on a Saturday afternoon, every Saturday at 2:00, we do a public reading of a play in progress, $5 donation at the door. Public is invited, and you would see a writer struggling to make a play work, and you can participate in the audience discussion that follows it, where the playwright can hear reactions to the work. And the Playwrights Network, the associate program there that I mentioned, it's about 200 people in there. But they send us their scripts, we send them critiques, and then we consider their work. For all the other programs that we have, we've produced plays from the Playwrights Network. 2 years ago, you might have seen Heat by Marcia Estelle.
Yes, I did. I enjoyed it.
And she was a network playwright at the time. She's since become a resident playwright. But that's what we do. We're trying to take care of the future of the theater.
So not only do you help nurture and start playwrights and help bring them along, but you also produce the shows. And I heard something else that, and I won't name the names because you'll be embarrassed, but some of your resident playwrights have told me that you really go out and sell their plays when you're really hot for a writer and a script. You help get it produced in other theaters.
Well, that's part of my job, and I'm expected to do that. And our biggest sign of success here is not that we sit around in this lovely facility and do good work. it, our biggest sign of success really is that the work, that the good work that we do moves on to other theaters in Chicago, other theaters around the nation, around the country, and is viewed and enjoyed by audiences all over the world. That's what we're really trying to do.
Well, give us a few of the success stories. I know you've had some plays at Victory Gardens, and you've done a number of them here with some of the hot playwrights and some of the hot plays over the last few years. Some of them are in the publication we'll talk about in a few minutes. But
well, two I would mention, I think, would be Rebecca Gilman was a resident playwright here for many years and developed a number of plays here. She is well known for her play Spinning into Butter, Blue Surge, and Boy Gets Girl.
She did one at, didn't she do the one at Goodman, an adaptation of a classic?
Oh, yeah, I think it was this year. Dollhouse, adaptation of the Ibsen play. But Eclipse Theater in town, by the way, is doing their whole season this year of just all Rebecca Gilman plays. So Rebecca's a real success story. Rebecca's plays are produced all over the world, all over the country, all over the world. And Brett Nevue is also a playwright who now he's started to get noticed by theaters all over the country. He just had a production at the Royal Shakespeare in Stratford.
Did he really? Which one did he have?
It was Eric LaRue was the name of the play. It was produced here originally a couple years ago by a Red Orchid Theater. But I know Brett has a show on right now at 11 o'clock called The Earl. It is great fun, and it's another side of Brett Nevue. But he's doing wonderfully. We have so many playwrights that are. David Barr right now is being produced all over the country. And Lydia Diamond, who we're producing right now, her play Voyeurs to Venus through April 15th here. She's had three plays commissioned by Steppenwolf. Her play last year at Steppenwolf, which was her adaptation of Toni Morrison's work, The Bluest Eye. Steppenwolf is remounting for a New York production this next season. And they've commissioned another work for her, another adaptation from her that presumably, or hopefully they'll do something with.
And Congo Square is also doing one of her plays currently.
Yes, and not only can you come here and see Voyeurs to Venus, which opens this Friday, the 17th of March, but 1 week later at Congo Square Theater here in Chicago, her other new play called Stick Fly will open at Congo Square. So that's two Lydia Diamond plays in 2 weeks.
You must be proud. I see the gleam in your eye, folks. The big smile when he talks about all these successful playwrights. It really must make you feel good, because it's one thing to be a teacher and to help develop people, and you kind of wonder and hope that your work does any good. But you can really kind of measure that what you're doing, that it has an effect.
I mean, it's been a long time. I've been here a long time, and 15, 20 years ago. And this place, Chicago Dramatists, is 27 years old this year. But 15 years ago, 20 years ago, this was not a good town for playwrights, Chicago. I'm happy to say that it is now a pretty darn good town for playwrights. That's all changed.
Well, it kind of started, didn't it, with David Mamet and some of the productions that the Goodman and Wisdom Bridge did, and then Victory Gardens, and then you guys got involved, right?
But, well, two things that really made a big difference were the leading example. Steppenwolf and the Goodman led by example in terms of their attention and emphasis on new work. Prior to 1990, if you saw a new play in Chicago, it was just a play that hadn't played in Chicago yet. And all that's changed. And a lot of people and a lot of theaters are responsible for that. Also, I think the town, in terms of being a theater town, it has grown. And it has matured. And, you know, after a while, you get tired of doing the same plays. And critics won't even review them sometimes anymore because they've seen them a million times.
Well, don't underestimate the effect that you've had. Everyone I talked to when I mentioned, like I talked to a number of people that I was interviewing you today, and I mean, you're kind of a god in this town. There's a lot of people that owe a lot to you.
Well, you know, everybody works here, and we're eager to work with everybody. We do a lot of collaborative projects with other theaters, partly because, well, you know, you should work with people who are out there and working. You should always try to work with people who are more experienced than you. You should work with people who are better than you. You'll learn more. But we really want to work with a lot of other theaters because it's a chance to possibly make a match in the development stage. A director gets interested in a play, a theater gets interested in a play in development, they might want to take it on, produce it. That's happened a million times here. Chagrin Falls by resident playwright Mia McCullough is a good example. We were about to do a reading of it. I suggested, gee, this looks like kind of a stage left play. Why don't we ask Kevin Heckman to direct the reading, who ran stage left. He did. He loved the play. A year later, they produced it, and she now has a budding career.
That's what people say about you, that one of your talents, besides being a good mentor and a terrific director, is you have a good sense of who a certain play would appeal to what theater group to give it its start. You know how to really match those up.
Well, to some extent. I mean, that's important. And theaters, you know, the thing that theaters hate the most is when a playwright is soliciting them, and it's a play that just they would never consider. It's all wrong for them. They always claim to hate that most. But the hardest thing is trying to figure out what they really would like. I mean,
well, you seem to have a good touch because you have a strong batting average.
Tell
us about this book. I mean, it has been a long time, and I can't remember if there's ever been a book of all new plays, all from Chicago playwrights. Is this a first?
It's a first. People have been talking about putting out a publication like this for probably 15 years, 20 years. And we finally did it. Chicago Dramatists did it.
Congratulations. I mean, the book has a great picture of the neighborhood right out in front of the Chicago Avenue. It's new plays from Chicago. And tell us about the plays that are in the book because, folks, this is a heck of a read.
It's a publication of eight. It's an anthology of eight new plays from Chicago, all of which have been successfully produced here in Chicago. Some of them produced by us, some produced by other theaters, and that would include Victory Gardens, Pegasus Players, Visions and Voices.
But let's talk about some of the plays. I know
Steppenwolf. I left out Steppenwolf.
Well, how could you leave them out?
And these are eight plays that they've all been produced somewhere in the last 3 or 4 years. And we didn't want to go back any further than that because we wanted them to still be new plays from Chicago. But these are looking for second productions, third productions, fourth productions.
Well, what I like about the anthology here is not only, obviously, does it have the whole script of the play, but you give the background of the play, the theme of it, you give statements from the theater group, and a nice history of it. So not only am I reading it as a good read, but if I was a theater group in Keokuk, Iowa, or Portland, Oregon, and I picked up this book and saw this thing and saw who did it, you even named the cast, which is cool, I might be likely to contact you and say, hey, how do I get the rights?
Well, that's what we're here for, and that's why we put out the book. It's really an effort not just to document good work that's been going on in Chicago, and not just an effort to find another way, a printed script, to get those works, these wonderful plays, out into people's hands and into their minds. Not just all that, which it is, but also really a way to look for those second productions. 20 years ago, all the playwrights were looking for first productions. Now it's more looking. There's a lot of interest in how am I going to get the second production, the third production.
Give us a little snapshot of each of the eight, and give us an idea first on how you selected these. I know it's a tough question, and I'm sure you probably could have filled several volumes.
Was it going to be six or seven or eight? How many can we squeeze in here? It turned out to be eight. It wasn't a magic number. We really could have put a lot more in here, and we're hoping to be able to do this publication every other year, eventually every year, so that it's annual, so that we're documenting these wonderful plays, and so that people around the country will see them and will want to produce them. But
plus, you know, there's a lot of us who love reading plays because that's a whole thing. I mean, there's nothing like the magic of the stage, but I'll tell you, I enjoy reading them too, and I know a lot of people who also do. So it's just a good piece of literature.
And it's eight plays, but it's also there's a little bio on the playwright. There's a little biography of the theater that produced it. All these plays were originally developed, at least in part, at Chicago Dramatists, and they're all by our resident playwrights.
So those are the two requirements to get in this.
Well, yes, that was part of what we wanted to do here. But other than that, it's just recent, successful. We, you know, we're trying to have a variety, a diversity of theaters that we're producing there. Steppenwolf, which is a very large theater.
Yeah, they did Mia McCullough's play, that two-hander, which I thought was outstanding.
Which is called Taking Care. And well, Brett Nephew, Robert Kuhn, Joel Johnson, Marcia Estelle, Mia McCullough, John Green, David Barr, Susan Lieberman. David Barr's play is The Face of Emmett Till, which has had some different titles in two different productions at Pegasus Players here in town. But The Face of Emmett Till is the title that he's settled on. But it's by David Barr and Mamie Till Mobley. So it's by Emmett Till's mother and David. They worked together before she passed away about a year and a half ago. And Mrs. Mobley wanted to document, you know, she spent her whole life documenting what happened to her son, what happened to Emmett Till. And this was another way to do it on stage. But there's a great variety here, too.
You've got comedies. You've got, a real variety. The Taking Care has a lot to do with schizophrenia and parent relationship, son relationship, mother-son relationship.
At the end of the tour by Joel Drake Johnson is a play about growing up gay in the Midwest. And The Liquid Moon is sort of a middle-aged comedy, and it's hilarious. It was subsequently produced. We produced it originally, and then it was produced at Barter Theater in Virginia, which is a big theater. I mean, they produced an amazing amount of shows every year, but it's a big, important regional theater. But there's a fairly modest nude scene in The Liquid Moon, and the Barter Theater was picketed, and it sold out every performance. But it's a wonderful show, and people love it. Arrangement for Two Violas, I always say that word wrong, by Susan Lieberman, is also it's also about what it was like to have been a gay man in the mid-1930s in a small town in Wisconsin. But all of these, there's a lot of variety. And it's eight whole plays for a mere $15 if you buy it here at our theater.
Okay, they can go to the website and buy it?
Yes. www.chicagodramatists.org. So dramatists, plural.
And give us the phone number and the address if anyone wants any information about any shows or any of the playwriting programs or the classes that you offer.
Well, go to that website. Everything's on the website. I can't remember the price of this book on the website. But I know if you show up here at the theater, the price of the book is $15, which is as cheap as it gets anyway.
Yeah, it's the printed price is like $20,
$19.95. Still a fabulous deal for eight plays. Normally for that price, you'd only get four or five. But you can also find this at Amazon.com. There's various theater specialty bookshops all around the country that are carrying it. And a couple of theaters in town, the Goodman, in their little bookstore area, they have this on sale. But also any of our programs that we have here, you call us at 312-633-0630. 312-633-0630. But that website, everything about us, all of our programs, all the current programs, are on the website. It's www.chicagodramatists.org. You can join the membership programs at the website. You can sign up for classes. You can buy this book. You can buy tickets to Voyeurs de Venus, which plays through April 15th, 2006.
Now, let me ask you a little bit about that in the interest of time. A little bit about the show, about who's in the show, and how you approached it. I mean, you were I assume you were involved in some of the development of this play. Mm-hmm. So you're not just a director who got a script from somewhere else and put your mark in it. You've had some input in this show already. So give us a little bit on that process and who are the key players in the show.
Well, I know Lydia originally wrote it as a commission for Steppenwolf, And at Steppenwolf, I know they did at least a couple of readings of it. And then we did a reading of it about a year and a quarter ago with Ed Sobel, who's the director of new play development at Steppenwolf, as the director. And then Steppenwolf passed on it. I mean, theaters all over the country, they commission all kinds of works, and they pass on a lot of them. It's not, but so we picked it up. And it's just it's one of the most exciting pieces I've seen ever.
And most exciting pieces ever.
I like it because it gives the director a lot to do. I have to really figure out how to tell the story on physically on stage. So that's very exciting for me. And also, what it has to say is very meaningful, I think. It's all about exploitation, how we exploit each other.
Wow. Now, the process. I'm always interested in the process. It's you and the playwright, and I assume she was involved in, since it was a world premiere, she was involved at the rehearsals. And how do you work with playwrights?
Well, every playwright's different. And you think you've figured out, you know, the play is the same thing on the playwright's side too, I suppose. But you think you've figured out how to work with playwrights, but every one of them is different. They all have their own personalities and their own needs and their own securities and insecurities, as do directors. So every time it's a whole new adventure.
Who wins if the playwright says, my vision is this scene should be played this way, and you, as a director, you know that, you feel that won't work, it needs to be played this way. How does that process work? Who gives? Is it a give and take? Or?
Well, I mean, for us, the primary artist in the theater is the playwright. This is our tagline is Chicago Dramatists, the playwright's theater.
So all things equal, they win?
Well, all the Dramatists Guild contracts are all... I mean, the playwright has... That's the wonderful thing about the theater. The playwright is the king, the queen. In the theater, it's the playwright's vision that we're trying to put on stage. I'm real traditional in this respect. Playwright is the primary artist. All the rest of us, directors, actors, designers, are interpretive artists. I'm trying to put the playwright's vision on stage.
You are a traditionalist in that way, and I respect that because I agree with you. I think that's the way to do it.
Well, otherwise, I should write my own play.
That's true, and a lot of directors think they're writing their own plays.
Well, and some directors go out and do write their own plays, and that's great.
Is your advice to a young playwright to direct their play or not?
No, they should work with the director.
Why?
It'll be one more person that's working on the play. I'll provide them objectivity. It's too much work to do it yourself. On the other hand, you want the best director for your work. Perhaps you are the best director. It could happen, you know. We're trying to put the playwright's vision on stage. It's a collaborative form, though, so it's a constant dialogue. You know, between the playwright and me and everybody else.
Well, I know that you're the kind of man that knows how to communicate with playwrights because the word around town and several I've talked to, who I will not name because they asked me not to, but they said that you listen to them and you don't just dictate because you're this expert who's been around, that you listen to what they want to do and you question them and then you try and see it the way they see it, and they really respect that.
Well, that's the only way to do it. I mean, you can't dictate to a playwright. That doesn't work. I mean, the playwright is the voice. The playwright needs to make the decision, whatever it is. And if the play is just incredibly long and needs to be cut down, the playwright has to choose how to do that. Or the playwright has to recognize that and accept that and choose how to do that. If it's forced on them, it's not going to work.
But you don't have a problem telling them, it just takes too long to get to wherever we're trying to go, and you can suggest cutting, but you kind of let them do the cuts?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, we can suggest things, but it's the playwright needs to make those decisions. Otherwise, they're not inspired decisions. They're mechanical. Also, you see, if someone else says, you know, there's a problem with this play right here, well, the playwright has to may well figure out, yeah, that's what that person says. But, you know, if I change something over here on this corner, they won't have that problem where they're looking anymore. So that's the challenge for a playwright in a public discussion after a a developmental reading of their work, is to listen to the audience, figure out which voices that they really want to listen to, and then figure out, is that what's really the problem or not? It might be something else that the audience is not able to articulate.
That's some terrific vision. That's good advice, because I've run in over the years in playwrights that they won't change a word. They get, it's like ownership, and it's like cutting their finger off to cut a line or a couple of words. And I tell them that's part of the collaborative effect. Listen to the directors. Listen to the feedback. Listen in a stage reading. If the actors are fumbling over lines, maybe the rhythm of the lines are wrong, or the words, you know, change the order of the words.
Well, a lot of that comes through experience. And, you know, if it's the first play or second play you ever wrote, you may be very protective of it. You just don't realize how collaborative things are. Well, it takes some experience.
How about audience reaction? How do you, as a director, guide your playwright when they're all, like, paranoid over the first few previews of a show or whatever, because you've been through this process so many times? And what do you take from audience feedback?
I assume you mean sitting there in the auditorium and sensing their reaction as the play goes on.
Or if it's a comedy and they're not laughing, or they're laughing at what you might consider the wrong parts.
Well, you got to take that seriously. That will tell you more than anything else. That will tell you far more than what your friends or your associates or your dramaturg or your spouse will tell you. You got to listen to the audience.
Yeah, ultimately the audience is never wrong.
Well,
most of the time.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far.
Okay.
But
and let's remind the folks of the show that's opening Friday night.
It's Voyeurs de Venus by Lydia Diamond, world premiere, Chicago Dramatists, plays through April 15th. Everything we do, we cast from scratch. You know, we use the whole city as the acting pool. We just try to get, you know, we do open auditions for all the shows that we do.
You do some equity productions, don't you?
Well, yeah, everything we do is equity. And we have an equity contract. It's actually called letter of agreement for all the development programs that we have. I think we have 6 letters of agreement for the different sorts of programs that we have that are developmental. For shows, we produce under an equity contract. And interestingly, Chicago is a place where there is a wonderful non-union community of actors. Well, with this show, it actually has, I think it's about 7 actors and plus 4 dancers. And so it's a fairly large show for us. For most theaters, that 12-person show is pretty big these days. 40 years ago, that would have been a small show. Now it's a big show. And we're a small theater. It's under 100 seats, but it's a very comfortable theater. It's not like a storefront. It's real nice and comfortable, and not that a storefront isn't. Excuse me.
You are so kind. Let me add that there's no bad sight lines. It is a comfortable theater, and you have enough intimacy, yet you have a large enough stage to do some sophisticated things. I've seen some really good stuff on your stage.
Well, hopefully you'll be surprised once again, because people have been telling us that this play uses the stage in a larger way than they ever realized before. So it's the set design is sort of circus themed, which fits the play in many ways. But it's kind of a hot show. I mean, it's kind of spectacular in its own small theater kind of way.
Well, the buzz on it is it's going to really be an interesting show. So what's the future for your organization and yourself?
The past few years we've been producing 2 shows a year. Next year we move to 3. Although in 27 years we've produced in all kinds of different formats. But, you know, you are what you do right now. But next year we will have 3 world premiere productions. And hopefully another anthology coming out. This summer we're doing something unusual. We have a 2-week festival of stage readings that's part of our Many Voices project, which is the first time we've done this. It's the first time Chicago has ever had a festival that is for all playwrights of color. You know, we wanted to work with more playwrights of color. That's where that came from. We thought, well, this is the way to do it. And the Sarah Lee Foundation is supporting that project. And I should mention, this anthology that we've been talking about, it wouldn't be here without the support of the Sara Lee Foundation. They are the exclusive sponsor of this anthology that we published.
Well, I know that Sara Lee is a good company, and they're really getting involved in theater. And I want to thank you so much for this interview and to tell you folks, we'll talk to you next time. Thank you for listening.
Well, there you have it. Another effervescent episode of Talk Theater in Chicago. But before I let you go for the week, I of course have to give you your Shakespeare quote. This week's quote comes from The Taming of the Shrew, Act 1, Scene 1. No profit grows where no pleasure is taken. Well, I can't thank you enough for joining us this week. Remember, you can come back here every Monday to find a whole new slew of episodes ready for your ears. This is Dustin Moat from Talk Theater in Chicago, reminding you, theater is happening. Don't miss it.